First of all, welcome to First Uttara Tantra official class here. And I think you know today is the day of Lord Buddha's Sagandhawa. Lord Buddha was conceived today, enlightened today, and passed from this earth on today. So all the virtue we do is like a million times more. I don't know, Lama Sopa could tell you exactly the number. But it's a good day to have, I think, the first class of this particular series. We were in Tucson the last 3-4 days getting poked and prodded by doctors and dentists and other kinds of things to see if we were still alive. And we had a chance to drive by the place where the teaching will take place in October. I think most of you know this course will be repeated in October over a 4-day weekend, Columbus Day weekend. And the crew, I think Gail is in charge of that, but they've found a very nice place. And we found out where it was, and we decided to drive by it. And it's really beautiful. It's called the Muse, right? And it's apparently it's an old YMCA on 5th Street, right off of 4th Street in Tucson. 4th Street, I guess you know, but I just found out, it's like the happening street in Tucson. It's where all the students come. It's like right across the street from the university, and then it's like the mall in Santa Cruz or the East Village, except it's only a few blocks long. So we drove by, and it's really beautiful. The gym was really beautiful. It's not really a gym. It's this huge, beautiful place, and it's broken up into different rooms now. We also saw a big sign that said rooms for rent, so we figured the Three Jewels can go in there afterwards. Or maybe before, but we're going to talk about that tomorrow maybe. Anyway, we got the rent and everything. And I think it'd be a good area. We also, due to Doug's work, we did some newspaper and radio interviews about the 3-year retreat. And I guess the newspaper thing came out the last 2 days. And then we went to do a radio interview, and the guy was very excited. He's going to run it for 5 days in a row. He did it like 5 times over the normal length, and then he wants to do it for a whole week. And then he said in October he'll do another long interview for the teaching in October. The reason I'm telling you all this is because you guys are going to be the teachers in October. And I've gotten a lot of letters from people, and there have also been ads put in Tricycle and other places for that teaching. So we expect, I don't know, when you expect you don't get that many, so maybe... But I think there'll be at least 200-300 people there. And we have to be, we'll be breaking out in the mornings. The classes in the mornings will be broken out into smaller classes, because we've gotten feedback from people that when they come into a class and there's 300 people there, you don't feel like you're getting any personal attention and you can't ask questions and things like that. So what we're going to do in October in the morning classes, they'll be broken out into those little rooms in the Muse space. And they're very beautiful little rooms with nice hardwood floors. They're used for dance and things like that. And each one of you who survive the next 10 classes will become a teacher. And maybe we'll team up people in pairs if you're shy. I don't know. But my idea is to break out the morning classes. You go, you get assigned, you're going to have assigned to you 5 or 10 or 15 students each. And then you have to teach what I'm about to teach. So that's kind of an incentive for you guys to do it seriously now, okay? And I want everyone to try. You know, I know a lot of you think I'm not a teacher or I never did that. And I remember the night that Punto came into New York. Thelma was there, the New York class, the first time. It was a really rainy night. Only 4 people showed up for class. And this guy named Punto, well, he wasn't called Punto Gbin, right? And he walks in and he says, I don't know any Tibetan, I can't teach, I don't know anything about this stuff. Now he's got a regular Friday night class in New York with 70, 80 students coming. And there are many people like that. So I want all of you to be in the frame of mind that you're going to be teaching this. And even people who listen to the tape or get the video 2 years from now, you have to be thinking in terms of teaching what I'm about to teach. The whole idea is a lineage, and we have to continue the lineage. So please keep that in mind. You're also going to get homework, and you'll also be responsible to do a quiz when you get into class on Wednesday night. We'll be going Wednesday night and Saturday afternoons. And you should get the schedule from Ellie because there's a break there for some vacation and somebody named Dalai Lama or something like that. And we'll be, Ken Rinpoche, we'll be busy with those things. How many people weren't here for the last, for the first half of this class? Oh, boy. Really? Raise your hand again. Ooh, okay. Well, we'll have to do a short summary. We did the first half of this first class just for good luck out on the lawn on the night we got here, on the night we broke the three-year retreat. But I'll just do a summary, I guess. And then we'll go ahead. This class will be about an hour and then a break for... Notice I said an about. a break for refreshments. And then we'll go for another hour. And then after that, we're going to have a dinner for everyone, so you're invited to dinner, right? Is that right? Yeah. Okay. And after that, from 6 to 7, or however late we go, we're going to do the great Sojung ceremony. Sojung means to, once a year, Ken Rinpoche has instituted a purification ceremony. And this was done in the great Tantric colleges in Tibet once a year. And instead of the usual monk sojong, which takes place every twice a month, where you get to purify all the vows that you broke in the last 2 weeks, in Sojong Chemo, you go through all your vows, which means your Pratimoksha vows, your Bodhisattva vows, and your Tantric vows. So what I'd like to ask is during dinner, everyone write down six pieces of paper, six slips of paper, okay? They'll be the three best things you did in the last year for your Pratimoksha vows, your Bodhisattva vows, and your Tantric vows. And then there'll be the worst three things you did in the last year for the same thing. If you don't have Tantric vows or Bodhisattva vows, then just write it down for your Pratimoksha vows. If you don't even have Pratimoksha vows, just the best of the 10 non-virtues that you avoided and the worst of the 10 non-virtues that you did, okay? And we'll burn them in the fireplace from 6 to 7. And then from 7 o'clock on, I think we have some kind of a celebration starring Sid and Mercedes and or something like that. Blind River or something. So that's the schedule for today. So I guess it looks like I have to go over a little bit of the last class. And that's just to summarize how we got the book that you're about to study. I better give you the title of the book first. There's going to be, as you know, the ACI courses are English tracks or English and Tibetan tracks. So I'll be writing Tibetan words up here. You're not responsible for them if you don't want to be. But, you know, most of us have found out that when you get under pressure at the Muse space in Tucson and some smart guy from Fairbanks, Alaska is asking you a question, you can spit out some Tibetan and answer him. And he doesn't know what it means and you don't know what it means, but it gets you off the hook, see? So it might be useful to write down a little bit of it just to recover yourself. So I'll be doing the Tibetan, and now since we're kind of into Sanskrit, especially that we're doing Tantric, starting the Tantric series next year, and a lot of the texts that we'll be using for the 7 year, 5 to 7 year Tantra series will be Sanskrit, which didn't reach Tibet. So I'm going to be writing Sanskrit also, and you should just start getting used to it. So there'll be a Sanskrit track too. Some people might want to do Sanskrit only, and English. Some people might want to do English and Tibetan. Some people might want to do all three. If the guy from Fairbanks knows Tibetan, you can throw out some Sanskrit and get him off your back. I'll say there was Sanskrit and Tibetan, and then I'd like you to repeat it. If it puts a seed in your mind, and even if you don't get into Sanskrit track this lifetime, it might be next lifetime. Say Uttara. Listen to how I say it. I don't say Uttara. I say Uttara. Say Uttara. And I don't say Tantra, I say Tantra. Yeah. But that's a very good example for distinguishing between what we call long A and short A. And we'll get better at that as the time goes. There's a word before Uttara Tantra, which is Mahayana. And I'll do it in Sanskrit just for those of you in the feeling brave for the Sanskrit. Tell me if I do anything wrong, okay? My Sanskrit's not as good as my Tibetan. Say maha.
Maha.
Yana.
Yana.
And then when A bumps into U, it changes to O. Mahayano.
Mahayano.
Tantra.
Tantra.
I'm sorry. Ottara.
Ottara.
Tantra.
Tantra.
Shastra.
Shastra.
Okay, that's in Sanskrit. I'm going to write the Tibetan for you. Say gyu.
Gyu.
It gets cut off a bit. Just I might as well teach you right. I mean, we're out here in the desert. Nobody's listening. Gyu.
Gyu.
Lama.
Lama.
Gyu.
Gyu.
Lama.
Lama.
Okay, good. You might notice that the Tibetan's a little shorter. And I'm going to give you the full Tibetan in a minute. But just to go through the words, Mahayana, you know, means big vehicle, Tekpa Chembo, big capacity. You're going to get a commentary by one of Jetsun Kapa's students, Gyaltsab Jay. I'm going to give you the reading. You don't get the reading today because I couldn't finish it because of the doctors and dentists and everything else. But Gyaltsab Jay says it's Maha because of seven different reasons. The big means seven different things. So this book is all about the big capacity people. Basically, it's people who are willing to work for the happiness of every living creature in the universe and aren't concerned only with themselves. Okay, so you go from one to infinite number of beings if you step onto Mahayana. So that's the meaning of Mahayana. Mahayana, okay. Uttara means Lama, and that's the same as Guru Lama. Lama means what? Teacher. But literally it means higher one. Higher one. Okay, so Uttara means higher one. Gyaltsab Jay, when he explains Uttara in his commentary, he says it's Anuttara. Anuttara. Anuttara, some of you may know, is the name of the highest tantric teachings, the highest group of tantric teachings out of the four. And it means Lama Mepa, above Lama, meaning there's nobody Lama above this book. Okay, like this is the highest book, Lama. Okay. So Uttara means Anuttara, means nothing higher than that. Okay. Tantra here, which is Gyu in Tibetan, and that's the Gyu in Gyume Tantric College and Gyudo Tantric College, which means a lineage. Okay, or it can mean Tantra also. Tantra usually means the secret teachings of Buddhism as opposed to the open teachings of Buddhism. Here it has nothing to do with that. We're not teaching secret books today. Okay, this tantra is not a tantra. Okay, this book is called a tantra because of the meaning of series. Tantra means a series, like a lineage. So when you say Gyupe Lama, for example, which is a different spelling, it means the lamas of our lineage. Okay, so tantra means that. And as we mentioned, in English, the word tan has come into the words tenuous and tenacity and tendon and distension, extension, meaning stretched out into a series or a line. Okay, shastra means a cutter, which means a commentary, an explainer, bit of analysis. It breaks the meaning up. So really, what this book is about is it's an explanation of the series, which is Uttara, and which is about helping all living creatures, Mahayana. Okay, so it's a commentary on the series, which is Uttara, and is about helping big vehicle, big capacity, people who can help all the people in the world. By the way, Mah comes into English with a prenasal, Mah. The H changes to G, and the N, which you get magnitude out of here, Magna Carta, magnificent, things like that, okay, from the Mahayana. Now we got to go to the Uttara. Why is it called highest? And you see some people, even like 500 years ago, they're saying, oh, it's the best book of all. So it's called Uttara Tantra. You know, that's not what Gyaltsab Jay says. Gyaltsab Jay says, think of highest in terms of ultimate, and think of ultimate in terms of the thing that comes at the end. Okay, like we have penultimate in English and ultimate, meaning the thing just before the end and the thing at the end. So think of Uttara as ultimate, but in the sense of the very last teaching, the very last teaching. So really, this is an explanation of the latter part of the teaching. Okay, that's the meaning of the name of this book. What teaching is he talking about? We talked about it already, right? You guys already know. You know that Lord Buddha turned the wheel 3 times. The first time, Lord Buddha appeared as a... Is it 3 times?
Yes.
No fourth? We'll see. The first time he turned the wheel as... mainly, he taught just after he became enlightened, and he taught the Four Noble Truths about suffering and how to get out of suffering and that kind of thing. He didn't say much about emptiness. Okay, the second turning of the wheel, he came on big time on emptiness. He said, everything's empty. Nothing in the world has any quality of its own. This pen doesn't have any quality of its own. You don't have any quality of your own. Your mind doesn't have any quality of its own. The world doesn't have any quality of its own. Nothing has any quality of its own. So Winston, this pen is not blue, right? So it is blue. So it has a characteristic of being blue, right? It doesn't have a characteristic of being blue. Oh, it doesn't have any characteristic at all. Or it doesn't have any quality that belongs to itself. So the blue doesn't belong to the pen. Blue my embata. So the pen's not blue. Oh, he's getting good. Forget it. We'll go to the next thing. Anyway, looks blue to me. Anyway, he said it doesn't have any characteristic of its own. And obviously Lord Buddha meant that the blueness of this pen is coming from you, from each person here. How can it be coming from me if everybody sees it the same? Ted Lemon. How can it be coming from you if everybody sees it the blue?
We all share the same karma to see it as blue.
Yeah, you all did the same action in the past to see it as blue. So that means that there could be a person without that karma?
Yes.
Like who? Sure. Yeah, a blind person. Or a colorblind person. They just would see it as gray. Okay? That's because they have something wrong with them and not because it's not blue, you see? So that proves in a way that the blue is coming from you. It's very interesting. It's very profound. So then in the third turning of the wheel, Lord Buddha said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Some stuff has its own characteristics and some stuff doesn't. Like pens are obviously blue. And especially the fact that it writes. It must have a quality of writing in it, right? Being able to write must be in the pen if it works. If I can draw something with it, the ability to write something should be inside this plastic cylinder, right? Like Lord Buddha, how do you say it? He did a New York Times correction. If you ever seen on the third page of the New York Times, they have a little column and they say, "We made these boo-boos last week." It's very honest in a way because people don't normally do that, right? And... So Lord Buddha said, "Oh, I made a mistake, you know." And people came up to him, some of the people from the second turning of the wheel came up to him and said, "This is too much. Are you telling me this pen doesn't write by itself?" And he said, he judged the student and he said, "This student can't handle what I'm teaching. I better back off." And he backed off a bit, okay? So he said, "Yeah, you're right, the pen is blue. The characteristic of being blue belongs to the pen. Writing belongs to the pen. I'm sorry, I was just being figurative. I was just trying to shake everybody up a bit, okay?" And then he passed away and he left it like that. Then for 2,500 years, people have to figure out, did he mean it when he said he didn't mean it? Okay? Or did he mean it when he said he meant it? You see? And for 2,500 years, people have struggled with this question. So we have a Manjushri Mula Tantra. That's a real tantra. That's the root tantra of the angel called Jambalyang, or what do you call it, gentle voice. And in that book it says, there'll be a monk named Asanga will come along and he'll straighten everything out. You know, he'll say, "Lord Buddha did mean that or didn't mean that," or, you know, "Lord Buddha was telling the truth in the second turning of the wheel," or "Lord Buddha was telling the truth in the third turning of the wheel." But you notice nobody has much trouble with the first turning of the wheel. Why? He didn't really talk so explicitly about emptiness. Lord Buddha didn't really... Emptiness is where people get screwed up, right? Before they hit Tantra. right? But emptiness is where people get confused. So Lord Buddha taught emptiness in the second and the third turning of the wheel, okay? So if you wanted to write a book about clarifying that series of teachings, first, second, third, turning the wheels, what would you call a book? Uttara Tantra Shastra. I'm going to the latter part, the ultimate part of the series, meaning those series of three turnings of the wheel. So I think if you ask 1,000 people, you might not hear this explanation once. It's very beautiful in Gyaltsebje, and it's hard to get out of Gyaltsebje. And it'll be in your reading if the reading ever occurs. But you'll see. So in a way, Gyaltsebje, a sangha, master sangha, is offering to explain the confusing latter part of that series. And that's why it's called what? Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. Which of the three turnings of the wheels is Mahayana? Which one of the three is Mahayana? You're telling me the teaching on the four truths is Mahayana? Included in Mahayana, you know, Mahayana, you mean, so everything included in Mahayana is Mahayana? Let's take the series of the paths that are intended for people of lesser capacity. Mahayana yimbata. So I guess it's Mahayana, huh? Well, right, because it's included in Mahayana, right?
Yeah.
So we're supposed to practice that by itself?
No.
Yimbata, Mahayana, yimbata. Yeah, because it's Mahayana.
Does
oh, it's not Mahayana just because it's included in Mahayana? Okay. Anyway, Mahayana was stressed in the last two turnings of the wheel, right? Okay. I mean, if you take the four great schools of ancient India, the two Mahayana schools are treated in the last. So it would make sense to add a word to the title of our book, which is Mahayana Uttara Tantra Shastra. Okay. And he's explaining. Shastra means he's trying to clarify what happened in the latter part of the Buddha's teachings. Okay. We had another explanation of this series thing. Anybody remember? What was it? Say again? Was it the Chang'e thing? Yeah, I think five books would be good. We're going to talk a little bit about how this book came to be, how this book came into our world, the Uttara Tantra. So everybody calls it Uttara Tantra, but you know that that's just the short name, right? Like people in Tibetan call it Gyu Lama. Say Gyu Lama. But that just means the latter part of the series. It leaves out Mahayana and it leaves out explanation. So people get confused about what the name means. But everybody in Tibet calls it Gyu Lama. Say Gyu Lama.
Gyu
Lama.
Gyu Lama.
Uttara Tantra.
Uttara Tantra.
Okay. It's one of the five great books of Maitreya. Maitreya gave Arya Sangha five great books when Arya Sangha showed up in his heaven one day. And you guys know the story. I think, I'll run over it real fast, but I think the people who weren't here should get a tape or something, because the whole story is kind of cute. But to put it briefly, Arya Sangha tried for 12 years. He didn't do a three-year retreat, he did a 12-year retreat, which is really supposed to be ideal. But we were afraid that caretakers would die. And he, in those 12 years, he stayed in solitude in a cave, and he tried to get a vision. He tried to meet Maitreya, and he worked really hard to meet Maitreya. At the end of the retreat, he still hadn't seen Maitreya. He gave up. He went out. He went to the nearest town. On the way to town, he saw a dog that had been run over by a cart, and it was cut here, like squished halfway. And the lower part of the body had been completely eaten away by maggots. And they were starting to attack the upper part of the body. And then he knelt down and he looked at the maggots and he said, I got to get the maggots off the dog or the dog's going to die. Then he had a thought, if I take the maggots off, the maggots are going to die. So He said, you know what I'll do? I'll get a knife, I'll cut a big piece of flesh out of my thigh, and I'll set it on the ground, and then I'll put the maggots on the flesh, and they won't die, and then the dog will be cured. So he goes to town and gets a big razor blade, he cuts a big piece of meat off his thigh, and he sets it on the ground, and he starts to reach for the maggots, and he says, if I pick them up, I'll crush them with my fingers. So he says, I'll just lick them off. So, but he's kind of grossed out, so he closes his eyes, and he puts his tongue out, and he goes down, and then, you know the end of the story, he hits the ground, and he looks up, and there's Maitreya, you know, and he says to, it's interesting, Arya Sangha's reaction is sort of interesting. He gives him a line of verse, which is to say, you know, where the hell have you been for 12 years, you know? You know, it's not, like, he's not all like lovey-dovey with Maitreya, he's sort of pissed off with Maitreya. He's like, you know, you could have shown me, you could have come to me the first week, you know, why? 12 years later, now you're showing, I'm already out of the retreat, I've left retreat, you know, now you're showing yourself to me? And Maitreya says, you couldn't see me. I was there the whole time. I was sitting right next to you. Sometimes when you cleared your throat and spat during the mantras, you spit on me. You know, I had to like dodge around all the time. And Arya Sangha says, well, I don't believe you're in the cave. If you're in the cave, I would have seen you. You know. And Maitreya says, oh, so everybody sees things the same way, right? And the Sangha says, I think so. I would have seen you, you know, if you were there. So Maitreya says, okay, well then you take me up on your shoulders and you dance around town with me on your shoulders and let's see what happens. And he does that and he dances around town, and you know the story. Everyone thinks Arya Sangha is crazy because he's dancing around town with nothing on his shoulders. And he's saying, look on my shoulders, I got Maitreya on my shoulders, you know. And you know the story. One old lady, one barmaid sees a puppy, just a little puppy on one shoulder. And construction laborer, sees, what did he see? I don't remember. Oh, he sees his toe hanging off right here. And as a result, they both read some high tantric level or something, you know. But in a way, the story of how, oh, and then the story goes that Maitreya said, now that you believe me, and the Sangha says, yeah, okay, I believe you. And he says, well, why were you trying to get to me anyway? What did you want? You know, and the Sangha says, I was trying to figure out emptiness, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't figure it out. Like, I figured out all those other books. I understand the Hinayana books. I understand all the other Mahayana books. I just can't get this emptiness thing. So Maitreya says, okay, grab onto my robes, and we'll take a trip. And he flies him to Toshita Heaven. I just read a book this morning that says, but Arya Sangha was able to get back on his own. So he flies to this heaven. He spends part of a morning there, and 50 years pass in human time. And during that time, Maitreya teaches him these five great books of Maitreya. Because Arya Sangha says, how am I going to teach everybody what you taught me? Because Maitreya teaches him the whole Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, which is like, it's about 25, 30 volumes. It's like 3,000 pages or something in an hour in the morning. So he says, how can I go back to Earth and teach people this? You know, can you give me something shorter? So he gives him these five very short books. I thought I would list them again. Well, I don't know if we have time. Let's see. Yeah, let's do it anyway. Okay. I'm shortening the names for your convenience, okay? Say Chu.
Chu.
Chu Ni.
Chu Ni.
Namje.
Chu.
Chu Ni.
Namje.
Amber, Chu. Dharma. Chu means Dharma, which means, here it means things. Things, okay. Chin Yi means Dharmata. Christina. Yeah, emptiness or the way things are. You see, when you add Ni to it, it means the way things are. So you got things and the way things are. Okay. Namje means distinguishing. Like this is the things, and this is the way things are. Okay. So it's a book about distinguishing things from the way things are. I'm going to go through the progression of the five books. Maitreya taught the five books to Arya Sangha in an order. And the purpose of the order is to get your mind from simple emptiness up to ultimate emptiness. Okay? So we're going from sort of a, what do you call it? Friendly interpretation of emptiness up to the real one through the five books. Okay, and I'm going to be quoting from Gyaltsev Jay's commentary, and we'll talk about who he is later. But he's a student of Jetson Kapa. He says, if you want to know what things means here, it means the things that appear to you. Things as they appear to you. Like Mr. Ben, am I separate from you?
Yes. No.
Yes.
Ultimately or conventionally.
Good. It's a great question, but stop the debate. Let's pretend you didn't say that. Ni major. So we are separate or not conventionally?
Separate.
Okay, so I'm over here and you're over there. Yimbata. Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Okay? I mean, conventionally, you can say, I'm over here and he's over there, and we're separate. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I can't build a house. Ben can build a house. Okay? That's a separate. We can't be the same person, or else I could just go out and build a house. So we're separate. But are we separate in an ultimate sense? Why not? And the answer in the lower schools, okay, we're talking mind-only school, is that this person that I'm seeing is a result of a seed in my own mind. In that sense, we're not separate. Okay, I see a person. There's a functioning, real, talking, working, living person out there. And I'm over here and I'm different. But I see that person because of a seed in my own mind. So in a sense, that person is a projection of my own mind. In that sense, we're not separate. Okay. So chö here means what Ben called conventionally separate. Okay? I mean, we seem to be separate from each other, right? There's space between us. That's the way things look. And then chi-ni means the way things really are, which is that even though it seems that I'm separate from Ben, everything about Ben, every single characteristic of Ben and Ben himself is a projection of my own mind because I want to project that, right?
Forced to.
Yeah. We always have to say forced to, okay? My karmic seeds, how I treated people in the past is forcing me to see a person, good, bad, mixed, like that. It's totally up to my own, how I treated other people, okay? And that's the chini of the things that just seem to appear around us. So chi means the way things appear. Chini means the way, the real situation. Okay. Why is namje a good word to put in here? Anybody? You've got to distinguish between that. You see? You've got to distinguish between that, you know? Like if you get angry at somebody, you fail to distinguish. You think that person exists there. You don't realize it's coming out of your own mind. And if you get angry, what's going to happen? Another one's going to come, you know? You goddamn well better be able to differentiate, namje, between the way things look and the way things really are. Okay? So that's a great book, right? I think. What else do you say about that? Okay, that's the first book. By the way, if you went up to Arya Sangha and said, when you say Ben and you are separate conventionally, is it real? You know, is Ben real? So is Ben real? You know, and it depends on how you define real, right? If real means the way I think of him normally, or usually as I go through my day, would you say he's real?
No.
Yeah, I think no. If you can still get upset by anybody, the answer is no. Okay? Meaning you don't really understand how they are. So in this first book, Maitreya didn't clarify the meaning of real as far as me and Ben. Okay? He kind of fudged it. He kind of fudged it, you know. He said, the appearance is, you could say it's real. Oh, real in every way? You could sort of say that. Okay, so you see where Maitreya is trying to, he tried to put out his first book a little more, what do you call it? Doubleday instead of MSTP. he's trying to reach a broad audience that, and he's watering it down a little bit for the broad audience, okay? And that's the way an author would do that, right? He's got to present it in an easy way. So when people got into, you know, is Ben real or not, he said, well, yeah, pretty real. Okay. Okay, say Utan Namje. U means the center of something, and especially of a along a line, like the center of a line. So it's like left wing politicians and right wing politicians, and then what do you call in the middle?
Moderates.
Yeah. As opposed to center. You see, center mean to, as opposed to center in the meaning of the center of a circle. This is not that. Whenever we say U, in this sense, it means the center of two extremes, like on a horizontal line. Okay. Ta means the extremes. Okay, the two extremes. Namje means
distinguishing
between the center and the extremes. Okay, what's the center and what are the extremes? Let's see what Kelsey J says. Okay. In this book, Maitreya goes one more step, and he says, you know that thing I talked about in the last book I wrote? I want to clarify it a little bit. Some things have their own characteristics, and some things don't. Let's divide it into three. Okay? So those of you who studied the Chang'e course with Winston, huh? Or the ACI 15 course, these are the three, what we call the three characteristics of things that are taught by the mind-only school. And I'll just go through them very briefly, you know. Does this thing really work the way it seems, according to the mind-only school, Mr. Stump?
Yes.
Yeah, it writes. It writes on the board. So it's real in that sense. It's true. It exists truly. It's real in that sense. It writes. Okay? Emptiness itself, Mr. Stump. If you see emptiness, can it really allow you to get enlightened quickly and see your future lives, for example?
Yes.
Yeah. So it functions. So those two things, ultimate reality and working things, changing things, normal stuff in the world, we lump them together, and in this book, Maitreya says, they exist truly, really. You know, they really exist. But now, what about the root beer float that's waiting for me behind this blackboard? You know? What about the root beer float that Christy will let me drink? That's waiting for me behind this blackboard. Where does that? How real is that? Even if it was there, I couldn't drink it. You know? I wouldn't get to drink it. So that's like what we call an imaginary thing, and in the mind-only school, those don't count as being real, true, having their own characteristics, etc. So we divide all things into three. We divide between the center and the extremes. You know, it would be too extreme to say nothing exists. It would be too extreme to say nothing has its own characteristic. Okay, pens have their own, and all the other stuff we normally deal with has their own characteristics. Emptiness must have some kind of power, some kind of characteristic, because when you see it, all this great stuff happens to you. But what use is a root beer float that doesn't, you know, that you're just thinking of that you know is not there? You know, no function, no benefit. That we throw into unreal things. So that's dividing the middle from the extremes in this case. So Lord Maitreya introduces those three ideas of the mind-only school. Some stuff really exists, some stuff doesn't really exist. Okay? So we're still in the mind-only school with these two books, the first two books. We're getting people to emptiness gradually. You know? Which means we're accepting which one of the three turnings of the wheel, Mr. Sid. Remember the first turning of the wheel, he just sat down with his five guys who had been his tiger cub friends in his past life. And he said, look, this is a real bad life. We've got to get out of this thing. Then in the second turning of the wheel, he says, everything's empty. This pen's not blue. Then in the third wheel, he backs. He said, I'm sorry. Yeah, of course it's blue. What was my original question? Oh, which turning of the wheel are we in now? The third, because he's waffling. He's waffling. He's saying, so, some things are, some things aren't, you know? Lord Buddha didn't mean it in the second turning wheel. Lord Buddha was just being extreme. Why? Shake people up a little bit and wake them up. You know? Okay. Sometimes that's necessary. Okay.
And then you went on to say that some stuff exists and some stuff doesn't.
According to that school, yeah.
Those are two things. Things that exist and things that don't. What's the thing?
Now, two of the groups really exist, which is A, changing things, and B, emptiness. And then one of the groups doesn't really exist, which is my root beer shape.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, we could change that, you know. We'll see. I don't know if they come out with a... Yeah, never mind. Say, dode again.
Dode again.
Do means sutras, meaning the teachings of Lord Buddha, and especially the open teachings. Dode means more or less the sutra pitaka, meaning the basket, the whole collection of open teachings. Okay. Gen means an ornament like this bracelet. That would be a gen. And sometimes when you write a book explaining someone else's teachings, you call it like a jewel for those teachings, meaning, you know, who am I to make Lord Buddha's sutras better? But I can sort of pretty them up a little bit with my explanation, okay? And that's why it's called Dode Gen. Sutra Alamkara. I'm thinking Krishna Kala can make the Sanskrit words for everybody who wants them, and then we can just pass them out, because I don't think we have time to do three classes in one, okay? But anybody who wants the Sanskrit, then you put pressure on her. I still think it's good for you to have in your pocket when you walk into the YMCA in Tucson, and there's like five sharp guys, like Brian Smith students you got to watch out for. We'll stick them all with Wilson. Winston. Sorry. There's another Wilson there. Now, this is how Gyaltsev J describes it. We're on the third book. This is how Gyaltsev J describes it. Ninandamba Dupa Makak. It says, in the third book, Maitreya didn't deny that Ben was real. Okay? But now the wording has changed, right? In the first two books, he's saying he is real. You know? Like he's a changing thing, he's more like a pen. It has his own characteristics. Okay? But his description of the third book is, in the third book, Maitreya doesn't deny it's real. Meaning what? It's a Mayinga. Meaning what?
It probably is, but it's a double negative.
He doesn't say it's real. You see? In the first two books, he says, Michael's real. You know? As I see him, he's real. You know? But when he gets to the third book, now we're on the third book, he doesn't deny he's real, which implies he doesn't say he's real. Okay? That's like a typical monk thing. Okay. Then he says, then he starts to teach, Maitreya starts to teach, how can you wake up the compassion in your own mind? How can you wake up bodhicitta in your own mind? So he's getting heavily into bodhisattva. How do you become a bodhisattva? Riksepa means everybody has that seed in them. And that's the big subject of the book we're going to study. If someone comes up to you the first day in the YMCA and says, well, what are we going to study? You can say, oh, Buddha nature. You know, this book's all about Buddha nature. There's a Buddha inside of you. Okay? How do you wake it up? How do you realize it? Okay, Riksepa. Then he says, Chanju Sambe Topa, Konne Kondo, Kepa de Doitsun. How do you get your bodhisattva qualities to get bigger and bigger, higher and higher? Okay? That's another subject of this third book. Dulja Shen Jeshu Zimbe Tab Gepa Ten La Pep means, what are some sneaky ways of collecting students and attracting them to these ideas? Okay? Like movies or music or yoga or business or, okay? This beautiful desert. Okay, how do you attract students? Okay. Then he says, then he says an interesting thing. Gyaltsev J says, Shungsumbo Dedaki ni Duje Sampa La Dupi Dindamba Tsamshik Denki. He says, the first three books of Maitreya present the ultimate in a way which is comfortable for the student. Okay? Like they present the ultimate, but in a way which is comfortable for those particular people. Ki, but, Chirtamje Rangi Teniki Drupe Tombai Dundamba Sawamaze. But they don't clearly talk about emptiness in the sense that nothing's got any quality of its own. Okay? Now that in itself is an implication. What? What's he implying? The last two do. He says, now the first three, they mention the ultimate reality, but just in sort of a schmoozy way, in a fluffy way, because the student couldn't handle it. But they don't clearly state, look, nothing's got any quality of its own. This thing's not blue by itself. This thing's only blue because you're seeing it blue. Okay? Anything you see about me is coming from you. Okay? Anything you see about what I say or how I act is coming from you. Same with the pen, same with your own mind, same with your world, same with the last guy who cut you off in traffic. Okay? Why get mad at him? Take care of the real thing. Shanti Deva says, don't get mad at the baseball bat, get mad at the guy who's swinging it. Come on. You know what I mean? Which is who? Okay. Me. Okay. We got two more books to go. Let's see. By the way, this is all the history part. It's a little boring, but we'll get to the fun stuff next class, right? Maybe it's not so boring. Say, Muntogen. Muntogen. In Sanskrit, it's Abhisamaya Alankara. This book by Maitreya, we study for the first 12 years in the monastery. When you enter the Geshe course, and around age 15, you're taught, at 13 to 15, you're taught basic logic and how to debate. And then when you're deemed fit to enter the debating ground, you're allowed to start studying the first book. And this is the first book we study. 12 years on this book. It's 50 pages long. Okay? You cover an average of 4 pages a year. And you spend about 10 hours a day working on it. Okay? It's really intense. I mean, this book is really intense. What does book number 4... Oh, if you translated it, it would be the ornament or the jewel of realizations. Muntok means realizations, and gen means the jewel. Again, like an ornament. Okay. I'll just quote Gyatsabje. Tombanyi Gitawa Tartupa, the ultimate view of emptiness, world view. That's what we call our organization, right? And that's what it means. All the other organizations are all under this thing called worldview. Tartu Kitawa means the ultimate worldview. Yangda Yangdu Sung. This book talks about the ultimate worldview over and over and over again. Okay? This book talks about the ultimate worldview of emptiness and karma over and over and over again. Mukyi means but what, Gyatsabje? Then he goes on to say, look, but the main thing that this book teaches is a peculiar idea about three shades of emptiness. We haven't gotten to it. We're not going to get to it in this course, okay? But there's an idea that there are three kind of like degrees of emptiness, three shades of emptiness, like the emptiness of a person in its subtle form and its gross form, and the emptiness of this house in its gross form and its subtle form. That you could put sort of shades of emptiness, and then you could divide everybody in the world into those people who can see the easiest kind of emptiness, and those people who can see the medium kind of emptiness, and those bodhisattvas who can see the ultimate kind of emptiness. And you can kind of shade emptiness into three different paths, three different ways. Okay, what we call listener, self-made Buddha, and bodhisattva. Okay, and that this book is mainly devoted to that idea. Is that a Majjhimika idea? Yeah, it is a higher school idea. But is it the highest part of the higher school idea?
No.
No, it's the lower half of the higher school. Which is called, do you remember? Svatantrika. Meaning, what do we call them?
Independent school.
Yeah. Those courses are bad. Independent school. So they accept this idea of three shades of emptiness. But the highest school, Prasangika, the consequence school, they don't accept that. Okay? Which probably means what's book number five going to be? Yeah, Gyu Lama. Okay, just say Gyu Lama. Gyu Lama really presents emptiness in its right form, highest emptiness. I'll quote Gyaltsev J again. This is from the ACIP database. Tepa Champa Gyu Lama Tenju Leni, the Mahayanotara Tantra Shastra, Gyu Lama, Namaripa Tsamgitsula Kombe, is presented for people who are already used to the mind-only ideas. Like, if you've been studying all those mind-only books, the first three books, right, of the five, and you got used to the idea of emptiness in a sort of easy way, fluffy way, then you've been set up for the Gyu Lama. You know? So Gyu Lama is for them. It says something which should be taught later on to people who have already been dragged through the first three books. Okay, they understand emptiness roughly. They understand the thing about Ben being created by the seeds in my mind. And in that sense, we're not separate. That's a lower emptiness. Okay? Why? Guess? It has to do with Kunshi.
Kunshi exists from its own.
Yeah, nice. Okay, I'll say it again. The mind-only school, the first three books, they only get as far as Ben's being projected by the seeds in my mind. Okay, but the assumption is the seeds in my mind are real. The projector is real. Okay, everything I'm seeing, everything I experience, even myself, that's a projection. But that special box out of which reality is pouring in my own mind, that box has got to be real. That much has got to be real. Okay? And then, in the fifth book, they come along and say, uh-uh. Even that box is your projection. The projector is your projection. Okay? And then we got to talk about that. That's a big argument in the Gyu Lama. That's a big subject in the Gyu Lama. And the point is that half the people you teach at the YMCA, they never heard of this idea of stuff coming out of a box in your mind. And you got to judge the people. You got to say, am I going to present Gyu Lama the way the first three books were presented, or maybe even before that, you know? And you'll be stuck in the same situation as Lord Buddha. You'll be stuck with 5 or 10 students from Kansas, maybe, or wherever. Except now the people I meet from Kansas are really smart. But anyway, you know, and you got to judge. You right on the spot, you'll start to say, now look, Gyu Lama's talking about this Kunshi thing, and you know, the Kunshi's just a projection too, and it's a projector, and they're going to be like, you know, and then you're going to have to back up. At the third turning of the wheel, back up, right? Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. Well, there's this Buddhism thing, you know, and you got to be nice to people, and, you know, and Gyu Lama helps you out with that, and...
Take out your pen.
See, you got to take out your pen and start. And, you know, you'll be stuck in that position, like, boom, from the first moment. You look in their faces, you start to talk about Gyu Lama, and then you'll adjust. You know, you'll do Chang'e. You'll go to wherever their level is, you'll have to adjust to that. You know, that's part of our job. That's what we do for a living, right? We just adjust to the audience at the moment. So anyway, Gyu Lama, in the fifth book, my trainer says, look, even the projector's a projection. Even the projector's a projection. Okay? And then he really begins to describe what's literal and what's not literal in the fifth book. Okay? So since you guys are so great, we're going straight to the fifth book, which is Gyu Lama. We're going to take a break, but just before that, I want to say one more thing. When Arya Sangha came back to Earth, and all his friends were... dead. He's like Rip Van Winkle, right? I know that I was only gone for 3 years and half of them are dead. But anyway. then he comes back and he says, how am I going to teach this to people, you know? And he gets 8 good students. And they go out in the middle of nowhere, like Bowie, Arizona. You know? He says, I don't care. 8 good students is enough. He takes them out in the middle of nowhere. It's a forest in Magadha state in India. And they go out in the forest. They go out in the middle, like just a tent in the middle of the mesquite, you know. And he says, I'll get these 8 people to understand what this is all about. And he really works hard on them. He gets them up to Supa, which is almost up to seeing emptiness directly. And he gets them up to where they can read other people's minds. And, you know, it's not like you wake up one morning and can read what somebody else wants for breakfast directly. But you wake up and you have a sense. It's just like a sense. Like you're kind of thinking, maybe Pelma would like tuna fish for lunch, you know. And it's just a sense that you have, you know. And you make it and then she's really happy. And it's like the beginning of Shensem Shepa, which is reading other people's minds. And then as you practice more and more and more, it becomes more and more clear in your own mind to where you can actually hear them talking in their own mind. But it starts with some kind of a instinct about what other people need or want. Or, and if you're going to teach people, like at the YMCA, it's really helpful. You can imagine how helpful it would be. Like you, before you walk into the room, you know whether you're going to have to back up or not. You see what I mean? And so for a teacher, it's really useful. So Arya Sangha was working really hard on his first 8 students to get them up to this level where they could at least have a strong instinct for what those people need, their students need. And you know the story. Eventually he got invited to a king's palace. The king wants to test him because he doesn't believe he's such a great yogi. And he puts him through these tests. And you know some of the tests, but I'll repeat one. He gets a golden urn made of pure gold. And inside he puts a bunch of snot and pus and poo-poo and pee-pee. And then on the top, he puts about 1 inch of honey. And then he like says to Arya Sangha, guess what I got in the pot, you know? And Arya Sangha says, I know what's in the pot and I wouldn't eat it, you know? And so the king is like, well, anybody could tell that kind of thing. And then the king asks Arya Sangha 6 questions mentally in his mind about the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. Like he beams 6 questions to Arya Sangha. We're going to cover those after the break, so you've got to come back, right? So take a break for 10, 15 minutes and just relax and go to the bathroom. And yeah? And there's a big thing of cookies in the refrigerator. You can spread those. Yeah. And then just relax and come back in 10, 15 minutes, okay? I've often told the story of meeting His Holiness's teacher in a train station in India, and he asked me what I was studying. I didn't know the name of it. And I'm just trying to prevent that with your own students in October, don't forget. Say Gyulatik.
Gyulatik.
Gyula means Gyulama, means Uttara Tantra, right? The Gyula is the short name for the Uttara Tantra in Tibetan, Gyula. Tik means commentary. It comes from Sanskrit, Tika. And the author of the Tibetan, now it's a Tibetan book, a Tibetan commentary, has chosen to name his book Gyulatik, which means Tika on the Gyulama, which means a commentary on the Gyulama. Okay. So if somebody says, what's the main book you're studying for your class? You just say, I'm studying Gyulatik. Gyulatik. Who wrote it? Oh, Gyaltsabje. Say Gyaltsabje.
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 Gyaltsab means... what do they call it? Regent. It means the person to whom the crown gets passed on to when the king goes away. Okay, so Jetsun Kapa, before he passed away, he passed on the lineage to Gyaltsabje. That's his right-hand man. Whenever you see a painting of Jetsun Kapa with his 2 disciples, the one on his right, which is your left, is always Gyaltsabje. Okay, so Gyaltsabje means the Jay means the great or the lord, like Jetsun Kapa, and Gyaltsab means Yuvaraja, young king in Sanskrit, which means the regent. Okay, the regent. So Gyaltsab Jay is the first holder of the throne of Jetsun Kapa after Jetsun Kapa passed away. And basically the thing with Jetsun Kapa and his students was, he would say, look, I don't have time to write a commentary on Gyulama, so you do it. You know? So you'll see that all the major commentaries done by Jetsun Kapa's students, like the Abhidharma Kosha commentary by the first Dalai Lama, they are handling the places where Jetsun Kapa was too busy. And he said, you take care of Gyulama, okay? Gyaltsabje said, yeah, I'll take care of it. Okay. There's an interesting coincidence here. I'm sure it's just a coincidence. Gyaltsab means region. Gyaltsab means the person to whom you hand over the kingdom after you leave. And I don't know if you know, but we are in what's called the Kalpa or the Aeon of Light. It's called Drimme Kalpa, which means we are in a fortunate time during billion years of... there's this span of the world, of the universe. The universe contracts, explodes, destroys, and then it comes back into being. And that takes billions upon billions and billions of years. It's called Tongkal. Say Tongkal.
Tongkal
is like billions and billions of years in which the universe is empty. And then there's Chakyal. Say Chakyal. Chakyal means the universe starts to form. And then there's Nekal.
Nekal
means the universe is staying for a while. And then say Jikal.
Jikal
means for billions of years it takes for the universe to die out and just reduce to dust again. So this whole process takes billions upon billions and billions of years. And there's this sine wave like this of reality, I mean, going on during that time. And only on one of the upswings does one of the downswings does a Buddha ever appear in the world. Like only when things are going bad, like when there's violence in the world, wars in the world, terrorist attacks in the world, pestilence, plagues, then that's a good time for religion. That's a good time. People start wondering about life. People start going to church again. And only during that tiny bit of time does a Buddha ever appear. And then 1,000 appear at once if you're lucky. And that's called a Drimme Kalpa. It's a kalpa of light. And 1,000 Buddhas will appear on this downswing now that we're on. Okay? 1,000 Buddhas. Shakyamuni Buddha, the one who came to India 2,500 years ago, was number 3. He was number 3. And the next one coming is Maitreya. Okay, so Maitreya is the coming Buddha. He's staying up in Tushita Paradise. Okay? And he's called the what? He's the Gyaltsab. He's the Gyaltsab. He's the region. Before Shakyamuni Buddha comes to this planet, he turns over Tushita Paradise to Maitreya, and then he leaves, you see? So I thought it's sort of an interesting coincidence that Gyaltsab Jay, the region, wrote the book about the region's book, you know? And people ask me, how long will it take for Maitreya to show up? In Pabongka Rinpoche's Lam Rim, it says 49 billion years. Okay? But there are other books. You see, there's an argument about Maitreya. And now I'm going to talk a little bit about Maitreya. See, Maitreya is said to be... He was a bodhisattva during the time of Lord Buddha. He was just a plain old bodhisattva, right? He was one of Nyewe Se Ge, means one of the 8 great sons of Lord Buddha, bodhisattvas. And then he saw emptiness and he started to work up the bodhisattva bhumis, the bodhisattva levels. And it's said that he reached bodhisattva level number 10 and that he's a 10th level bodhisattva and he's sitting in Tushita Paradise and he's about to reach this world. Okay, he's about to come into this world. And then there are other books, tantras, secret books. They say, look, oh, Maitreya, he was enlightened a long time ago. You know, he was enlightened billions of years ago. He's already a Buddha. And I guess what I wanted to say in this regard is that it's less than 500 years. The next Buddha is less than 500 years from now. And to be frank, you, each one of you is close enough. You will be the next Buddha, okay? Like I can say that and you can say, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm busy. you know. But I'll be very honest. If you are at this cusp in history, if you are on this particular location at this particular time, I say quite frankly, and I'm not being... I'm not just trying to be poetical or something like that. If you just keep going at your normal pace at this time, you will be Maitreya. You will be the next Buddha. Like, you're that close. You're extremely close. each person here is extremely close. And you should think in terms of those, when you think about your life and you feel dissatisfied with your life, or you feel like you're not doing much, or you feel like, you know, just everyday life is too much of a struggle, you should stop that thought. And you should say, how can I set up the world now for me to come into this world, you see? You have to think, when you walk around Bowie or Tucson or wherever, your house, you have to think, what can I do today to prepare the world for my... This is going to be my world to teach in. You will be coming to this world as the teacher, as Maitreya. And it's hard to believe, and you think, oh, you know, I'm busy, and you don't really believe it. You think Maitreya is some guy up in the heaven somewhere, and he's got Chinese eyes for sure, and must be a lot more advanced than me, or I don't see how I could be the next Buddha. But you will be. And that's just the way it works. And I tell you that. And now when you go out in the world and you get, as you work at your job or even as you're with your family, when you wake up, you have to think, what's the best way I could prepare the world for me? I have to come. You know, I've got a job to do on this planet. I will be coming to this planet. I will be coming to more than this planet. How can I, in my lifetime, prepare things? What can I do to do the best preparation for myself? Because you will be coming. And that's the way it is. And you'll see it unfold. And I can tell you, and you kind of don't believe me, and you think, somebody wrote an email to Ellie. I think Geshe Michael needs a psychiatric exam. You know, he's acting weird. Maybe. But it's true. It's true. Now, how can there be so many Maitreyas on one planet at one time? You know? Six questions of the king. This is not like a normal subject that's taught. But I read them over again. I said, God, we've got to put this in the course. This has got to be part of the course. Okay? So we don't have much time. We'll go through them a little fast. But in my mind, they've got to be on... They're not a mistake at all, and they're not like some historical blip or something. They're really the whole essence of the Gyulama is in the questions, the six questions. So I'm going to read them. This is from... a history book written by a historian named Taranaka, who did a big... one of his biggest contributions was to bring Buddhism to Mongolia. So all those who have been to Mongolia, it was really Taranaka who did most of the work. Okay. Oh, I forgot. I wanted to spell Maitreya's name for you before we get to the six questions. Say, Champa.
Champa.
When you become a monk... When they give you your vows, your first name is normally the first name of the person who gave you your vows. Normally the abbot of the monastery gives all the vows in the monastery. And normally the abbot is elected for like 3-year term. So our abbot, when I was there in my early years, was named Jampa Dunya. And he got reelected 4 times. So for 12 years, every monk in the monastery who got vows was named Jampa. So I made like 100 Jampas running around the monastery. You know, like people say, I'm Jampa 73, you know. And the Jampa in Howell is one of those Jampas, just so you know. Jampa Lungri. So Jampa means love. Jampa means love. It's the desire to give people everything they need. It's the desire to give people everything they hope for. That's called Jampa. So his name, Maitreya. Maitreya means love. Okay. We talked about it in the Yoga Sutra, but Maitreya comes from a root, mit, which means to mix or to be friendly. And like Kalyana Mitra, the old Sanskrit word for geshe, which means spiritual friend, means that. That came into Latin as mingere, from mink, and then it means to mingle or to get mixed together. So it means to be friendly or to mix with people. And Maitreya does just that. Sometimes he's called Jamgun. Say Jamgun.
Jamgun.
Jamgun. Like some of you have heard people, Tibetan lamas, with the word Jamgun in front of them. Jamgun means gentle. It means the loving one, Jampa. Gun means protector, the protector. And in Sanskrit, it's Maitreya Natha. But it means the protector. So you might see Jampa's name, Maitreya's name. Sometimes in books, it's the protector, Maitreya, Jamgun. Sometimes he's called Mipam. Mipam means unbeatable, undefeatable. And that's Ajita in... like I had a diamond dealer friend named Ajit, and it means undefeatable. These are different names that you might see used for Maitreya. These are all different names for Maitreya. I thought I'd throw in a Sangha name. By the way, it's good to have children here. So if any of you have children and you want to bring them, it's very good, okay? To class, anytime. We might gag them, but no, but it's very good for the children and it helps the class too. So anytime. Anytime. Say, Togme.
Togme.
Togme is a Sangha's name in Tibetan. He's called Togme. Tog, as we mentioned the other night, is to strike an obstacle that you can't get through. Like that's called Togpa. And Togme means you just pass through it like winds, like the wind. You know, Togme means, I like to call it hot knife through butter. Just whoop and you're through. So Togme means, you know, passes through obstacles like air. Okay? And that's what a Sangha's name means. Ah. Ah means, meh means not. Sangha means to get stopped, trying to get through something. And his mind was so powerful that he was called a Sangha. Nothing could stop him. No problem could stop his mind. He just whoop, go right through it. Okay? His name is Mr. Whoop. Okay? Lived around 350 AD. I just wanted to say that something about his position in our lineage. I think you know, let me do this. You can split the Lam Rim. All the teachers of the Lam Rim, the lamas of the Lam Rim, can be basically divided into Gyachen Chöpa, which means bodhisattva activity side of the lineage. And then Sammotagyu, which means the emptiness side of the lineage. And this side of the lineage comes down from Lord Buddha through Manjushri and then Nagarjuna, mainly. This side of the lineage comes down through mainly Avalokiteshvara, Chenrezig Singh, and then Asanga. Or you can say Maitreya. But it divides that way. So in one sense, Asanga, Arya Asanga, represents the whole bodhisattva side of our Lam Rim lineage. So he's looked upon as like the forefather of that. You can also split all the high schools. You can split the highest schools into middle way and mind only. And there's this big deal called the inventors, you know, the two inventors. Like there are only two people in history before Jetsongkhapa that were considered so important in the world as to be considered like a second Buddha in the world. And they are Nagarjuna and Asanga. So Nagarjuna is considered the founder of the middle way school in modern times, after the Buddha. And then Asanga is considered like the founder of the mind-only school. Which makes Asanga a mind-only practitioner, right, Winston? Yeah. Okay? He's not. He's not. You know, he was predicted, right? He would clean up the mess about the second and third turnings of the wheel. He would clarify what the Buddha really meant, what the Buddha didn't really mean, you know. But in so doing, he clarifies the lower version of emptiness, mind only. So he's remembered for that. So his name is attached to this side of the family. So that's two ways to look at Arya Sangha. How do we know he's an Arya? How do we know he saw emptiness directly? There's a big debate in the scriptures, you know. And I've been reading some of the histories of Sangha, but some books say that when he got to Tushita, he gained Chögyun Gyi Tingenzin. Say Chögyun
Ki
Tingenzin. You know what it is? Not Chögyun. Chögyun? Yeah, it's a kind of samadhi. It's a kind of concentration. When you reach this level, you remember all the Dharma teachings you've ever had for all your lifetimes. Just boom. And it's very noticeable. Like you start to recall stuff you heard 3 or 4 years ago. And then 5 years ago, then 10 years ago. And then you can trace it back to the beginning of your life. Things that you were taught. But you get some kind of deep samadhi where just everything you ever heard, like every ACI course you ever heard, you can quote pages from it. And you know, a lot of people here have pieces of it. You have hints of it. Like just things pop in your mind and you're able to roll things off your tongue. You've got a little taste of Chögyam Gyatso Zen. Some of the retreatants in 3-year retreat were getting it. It was very sweet to see. It was really powerful. Like there were people who didn't know Tibetan, and then towards the end of retreat, they got 2 weeks training and they were reading Tibetan. They were able to just read it. The sounds like that, you know. And I felt like they were getting Chögyam Gyatso Zen. But it's a powerful sign, and it comes, do you know when? Jolam Su. Say Jolam Su. Chochon. There's 4 levels to Jolam. There's 4 levels to the path just before you see emptiness directly. When you reach the 3rd one, you get this kind of concentration where you can recall things. Or you're like super sensitive to Dharma and you get it right away. Everything just flows into your mind. People say that Arya Sangha got that when he stepped into Tushita Paradise. Which makes sense, because then he was able to hear Maitreya. But that also applies what?
He was very close to
seeing it. Yeah, implies he wasn't an Arya when he got to Tushita. He had not seen emptiness directly yet. And I believe that's the case. Later, other texts say he went on to reach the 1st bodhisattva level and see emptiness directly after he was teaching for a while, after he came back. And then most books agree that by the end of his life he had reached the 3rd bodhisattva level. Okay. They say by comparison, Nagarjuna reached the 1st bodhisattva level. And Maitreya, in his current condition, has reached the 10th. Okay. That'll be in your reading. You'll see some of the readings for that. But that's about how rare that is. It's extremely rare. And that's kind of the amount of people who do it. So we call him Arya Sangha. We never just call him a Sangha. So whenever you speak about him to your students, you should always say Arya Asangha. In Tibetan it's Pakpa Togme. Pakpa Togme. Okay.
Do you prefer to call him Master Asangha?
I think Master is okay, but Pakpa's more rare, you see. Arya's even better. I know there's a little thing about Arya and Nazis and all that, but you can explain to people, right? So I think that's all right. I wanted to say one more thing. So we'll be studying Gyaltsub Jay's book, but also Arya Sangha, later in his life, he thought it would be good to write a commentary on Gyulama. And so he did write a commentary, and it exists in Sanskrit. We still have the Sanskrit, and we still have the, and of course we have the Tibetan. So I'll be teaching you a lot from Master Asanga's commentary to what he heard directly from Maitreya. So you'll be getting Gyaltsub Jay's commentary, which is based heavily on Arya Asanga's commentary. And then how do you present a 12-year course in 10 weekends? You know, we use the Gyulama in the debate ground in Serame. We use it, not a lot, but we use it on special occasions in certain difficult subjects. You pull out a Gyulama quotation. You start quoting Gyulama. Like, Gyulama is particularly known in Serame, the best monastery in the universe, for being effective in certain arguments. You know, there's certain places where Gyulama really tells you the bottom line on something. So what I thought for this course is we'd pull out those parts. And so you're going to get the parts of Gyulama based on Arya Sangha's text, based on Gyaltsub Jay's text, but pulled out from the places where if you were a monk at Serame Monastery, you'd be arguing from Gyulama. You see? You'd be, because on those questions, Gyulama is most powerful. So we're going to be extracting the course out of where Gyulama comes up in a typical Tibetan monastery, most often, with really powerful debates, especially about Buddha nature. You know, are you a Buddha already or not? what's the nature of the Buddha inside of you? You know, and we'll be debating that a lot. Okay, back to the six questions of the king. I'm just going to read them from Taranatha's text. Chanju Semba She Jawa Kangi Tsi Lada Yin Chibala Chanju Semba Yandapa Jesu Mitongo She Len Tapa Di Numatembe Tawar Mingyuram. Ram means a question mark. Okay, the king is beaming this ESP question to Arya Sangha. Can you hear me? Can you answer this question? Okay. The question is, somebody came up to Lord Buddha and said, Bodhisattva, the word Bodhisattva is a word for something else, right? What is it a word for? These are, as you remember from the other night, the first three questions are about what? The wording of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. And the last three questions are about the meaning of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. So now we're on the words, right? So somebody's asking Lord Buddha, you mentioned Bodhisattva. Is that a word for something else? Did you mean something else? What's that a word for? And Lord Buddha says, Chandru Semba Yandapa Jesu Matong means, don't even think that you can see a Bodhisattva. There's no Bodhisattvas around. You can't see a Bodhisattva. Okay? Somebody asked him, what's Bodhisattva a word for? He says, don't even think you can see Bodhisattva. Then they say, Lentapa Lumatembe Tawar Mingyuran means, was Lord Buddha giving one of those non-answers? Okay, we call them the 14 non-answers. Lord Buddha got asked 14 questions in his lifetime that he refused to answer. Okay, so they're proposing, like, is that number 15 or something? Okay, why did Lord Buddha refuse to answer? Is this a pen?
Yes.
Actually, Ben did a Lungmaten this morning, earlier in the class. I said, are you separate from me? And what did he say? Yeah, he came back with a question, which is a debating tactic. Which is, you see, Lungmaten means if he just sat there and refused to answer, he'd be telling us, you asked the wrong question. The question is unanswerable. As your question stands, it can't be answered yes or no. Okay? Is Ben separate from me? Okay? You can't answer that yes or no until the person says, ultimately, or conventionally, or apparently, or something like that. Okay, so they're called unanswered questions. So the king's first question is, when Lord Buddha refused to answer this question about bodhisattvas, or said you can't see bodhisattvas anyway, was he giving a new unanswerable question? And Master Sangha says, no, he wasn't. He was just talking about the fact that inside you are empty. Okay, inside, meaning that bodhisattvas are empty. Okay. Is it really true you can't see a bodhisattva? No. Is it really true you can't see a pen? No. Ultimately, is it true you can't see a pen? Yes. That's all. So he was talking about the emptiness of a person, of bodhisattvas. That's all. That's what he's talking about. Second question. Cha shindu lu cha pak tse ngap ya yeba she per chebe lu cha di dung kang dang jor. Lord Buddha was talking about some big bird. He's got wingspan of 500 yojana, which is 750 miles. Okay? What was Lord Buddha really talking about? Okay? And the answer on the next page, Gewe le topchewa. He was saying, look, if you want to get into the business of dealing with emptiness, you're going to need a hell of a lot of good karma. Your karmic wings have to be 750 miles wide. Or you can't even... You'll sit here and you'll get bored to death and you won't come back. I mean, it's not only that reason, but in general, to listen to emptiness, to understand emptiness, to give the right answer about the pen, to have the karma to do that is extremely rare. Extremely rare. And you guys all have it. Okay? You all have it. Last question. Last of the three questions. Ri naksa ki tsema ma tongna gyatso dan tanyeyo shepa la Tsema ma tongwe san tsam, kang la che, chepa. Check this out. That's why I couldn't remember it the other night. When you no longer see any sign of the mountains and the forests, Okay? When you no longer see any signs of the mountains and the forest, you will know you are close to the ocean. What is the line at which you can see the signs? What is the line at which you can still see the sign? I'll say it again. When you can no longer see any sign of the forest, of the mountains and the forest, you know you are approaching the ocean. What is the line at which you still see the sign? Okay. Just take a shot. Who wants to take a shot? What's he talking about? You want me to say it again? What did I say? Oh, when you no longer see any sign of the mountains and the forest, you know you're getting close to the ocean. What's the line at which you still see the signs?
Is it maybe a moment when you're noticing you're experiencing emptiness directly and you start to wonder if I'm seeing emptiness directly and then...
Close.
Is it Chichok?
Ah, Ted. Ted and Chukila said, is it Chichok? What's Chichok? Anybody? What's Chichok? Chichok, yeah. Yeah, which happens
just before you see emptiness. Right?
Yeah, in the minutes, like hour, like the hour that you see emptiness directly, you reach Chichok. And specifically, you reach what we call Chichok Chewa. Chichok Chewa means big stage Chichok. Like there's a lower stage Chichok, medium stage Chichok, and big stage Chichok. Lower stage Chichok is like 2 hours before. Middle stage is like an hour and a half before. Chichok Chewa occurs like the, that's the moment you see the dependent origination of the pot. Directly.
Are those three of the four parts of Dhruvam?
It's the three parts of the fourth part of Dhruvam. Yeah.
Three parts of the fourth.
Yeah. So in Dhruvam, when you get to big level Dhruvam, it's just before you see emptiness directly. Okay? Would you still be seeing the signs? Signs means in Madhyamika language, still seeing things as self-existent. Would you still see the signs? Yeah. But you're getting close to the ocean. And that's the line. That's where the line is. Like you're just coming out of the mountains and the forest onto the beach and you're just about to lay eyes on the ocean. Okay. Let's see what Arya Sangha said. Sumbani, the answer to the third question is Chichok Chen. Chichok Chenmo. They gave the answer. They gave the right answer. Okay. That's exactly what Arya Sangha said. That was his answer to the key.
So dependent origination. Seeing dependent origination.
Yeah. Yeah. Last moments of Dhruvam. Last moments of the path of preparation. Just before you see emptiness. So Arya Sangha answered that one. Now we go on to the meaning. This is a little harder, okay? We'll see how you guys do. I fudged it the other night over here because everybody looked tired and wanted pizza. Okay? Not me, of course. Let me find a question. I said the first question about the meaning of... By the way, this is the last part of the class, so don't lose hope. You know, this will be the last part of the class. But I say you got to go back and kick ass on studying this stuff or you're not going to make it with your own students. This first class is a little hard. And I said I require that you not only do the homework and quiz, but that sometime before the next class, you discuss this class with one other person. Okay? Could be Andrea... could be tricky, you know. But so now you got three jobs. You got to prepare for a quiz, you got to do a homework, and you have to discuss this class with one other person. I don't care, say 10 minutes, but you'll end up doing it for an hour. And it's really, really cool. It's really, really cool. And then you'll get a quiz at the beginning of the next class, okay? And you should finish all 10 classes. You know, the same old rules apply, you know that. Miss more than two classes, you don't get a certificate for this course. And I don't want you teaching at the YMCA because you won't know what you're teaching about. So, you know, it's really good if you can make all 10 classes because now there's got extra pressure on you to do. You got to teach people this. The last class is like a week before the YMCA happens. So you got to be ready. Yeah. 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 It's okay. If you are in a barbarian land like Illinois or Indiana, Illinois, Talk to me. I mean, exceptions for extraordinary things. Like, some people are flying to hell to get to hear His Holiness Ken Rinpoche's teachings. And if you know, talk to me about exceptions. But no exceptions, but talk to me about it. That's the way it usually goes, right? Kunshin Namba Shepa Zeso Yetam Me. I said the other night, does storehouse consciousness exist or not? But the real question was, does storehouse consciousness exist in a material way or not? The king was more sophisticated. Like, asking Arya Sangha if storehouse consciousness exists is easy. Asking whether it exists really is a whole nother ballgame, right? And it's the Ben question. It's the Ben question, okay? Does the projector exist? Is there a place in your mind that seeds are ripening and spewing out your reality? By the way, it comes from a dot at the heart, smaller than the point of a needle. It comes from a tiny dot, Mishigbe Tigle, at the heart, is spewing forth your whole universe. There's a piece in your own heart, in the chakra in the heart, that is spewing forth every detail of this universe, as we speak. Okay? Does that exist? Does the spewer exist? I mean, that's the... Of course. Because... We're here. Okay, we're here. That proves it. But the king was more sophisticated than that. He said, does it exist really, materially, substantially? What do you think Arya Sangha said?
It's a density of everything else.
He's very cool. I'll read it to you. It's a very cool answer. It's a little complicated, but it's okay. Kun zoptu zesu yu. The answer is kun zoptu zesu yu. In a deceptive way, it exists substantially. Okay? In an apparent way, it really exists. That's a cool way to get out of it. It's about what Ben said. It's about the same thing. Dun dambe rikshiki dun me. Dun dambe rikshiki dun me. In an ultimate way, Rikshe me, which means what? There's no state of mind that exists ultimately. You know, in a deceptive way, in an apparent way, it exists substantially. In an ultimate way, come on. There's no thought in the world that exists that way. What are you asking me for? You know, okay? He gave a really good answer. It's exactly what Ben said when he said, are you talking conventional or ultimate? Okay. Now, you guys got to be able to explain that to a plain old Joe that shows up to YMCA, right? If they can get to the projector part, is there a part of your mind that's projecting this room? Yeah. Is there a part of your mind that's projecting everybody in this room? Yeah. But are you also projecting that projector?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any part of your mind that's not being projected?
No.
Come on, why'd you ask me that for? Okay, that's Arya Sangha's answer. So you can explain that to people, right? I think what's really, really important, don't leave people with some philosophical bolt, you know. Don't leave them with that, you know. Say, what's this got to do with anything? Well, when you walk out of this room and you go over to 4th Street to get your Mexican dinner and lunch, after this class, and the guy spills Coke on your lap just before going back to class and teach the other people, right? You got to think about the projection. You know, I'm projecting this incompetent because I've been incompetent to others. You know, and if I get mad at his incompetence, I'll come back tomorrow and get another Coke spilled on me. You know? So I'm going to help him clean it up, and I'm going to be calm, and I'll go back and explain to people about projected Coke stains on my robes. And that's the point of talking about projection. I mean, you got to take people to the next step, right? I think that's what distinguishes ACI from other, you know, presentations. Sooner or later, people get tired of this intellectual BS about, oh, everything's a projection or not a projection, or is it exists or doesn't exist. It doesn't matter. But if it's applied to your real life, You know, if you could clean up your world, like taking a sponge and cleaning up the coat, you know, then it's worth it to go through all these classes. You know, then it's worth it. No more irritating people in my life. That's a holy goal, you know. That's worth everything, you know. And that's really what people want. Last question. No. How many we got? That's four. Ooh. Sorry, we're going so slow, but gee, it happens. Chittam je ngoni me par sumpe, kangoni me par yangoni metam. Lord Buddha said that all things. Lord Buddha said that no existing object has any nature of its own. Was he also implying that not having any nature of your own didn't have any nature of its own? I'll say it again. Lord Buddha said no existing object has any nature of its own. Was he therefore implying that not having any nature of your own doesn't have any nature of its own? That's a no-brainer, you know. Is emptiness empty?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. Okay. I'll prove it. I mean, you can get up and talk about emptiness and a certain percentage of people in the room will fall asleep. See, they're perceiving it as a boring, irrelevant, uninteresting thing. You know, somebody else in the room, suddenly grasp it after the 10th or 100th time hearing it from Geshe Michael, that this could be applied to that irritating person that they live with. You know, like suddenly it just dawns on them, you know. After all these years, you know, he's talking about the person I'm staying with. You know, I could apply this to in my own house, you know. My roommate is empty. I don't have to see them like this. You know, I could see them as divine being if I could just be more patient myself. You know. The fact that two different people in the room can get two completely opposite understandings of emptiness proves that emptiness is
empty.
Okay, so that's a no-brainer. Everyone's got that one, right? Don't forget to bring it up to the waiter who spills Coke on you. This one's tough. Good place to stop. Tomaniki chetamje tomani du che ma che par shepe. Lord Buddha explained that it's not emptiness that makes everything empty. Lord Buddha said, it's not emptiness that makes everything else empty. And the question is, who is it that doesn't make it empty, and what kind of empty doesn't it make? Okay, I'll say it again. These were tough questions. He was a pretty cool king, I think. Lord Buddha said that there's nothing which makes emptiness empty. Who is it that doesn't make emptiness empty, and what kind of emptiness doesn't it make empty? Need it one more time? One more time. Lord Buddha said, there's nothing that makes emptiness empty. I'm sorry, I gotta change that. Lord Buddha said, it's not emptiness that makes emptiness empty. I'll say it again. Lord Buddha said, it's not emptiness that makes emptiness empty. What kind of emptiness was he talking about that doesn't make emptiness empty?
What kind of emptiness does not make emptiness empty?
Yeah. And what kind of emptiness is not made empty?
The kind of emptiness that isn't empty.
Let's put it this way. Here's an emptiness that is not making things empty. Here's an emptiness which is not making things empty. Lord Buddha said that emptiness doesn't make things empty. Lord Buddha said emptiness doesn't make things empty. The question of the king was, what's the emptiness that doesn't make things empty? And what's the emptiness that it doesn't make empty? Got it?
What kind of emptiness does not make things empty, and what kind of emptiness makes things empty?
And what kind of emptiness that is not made empty by it? You okay? You guys okay? I'll say it one more time. Emptiness, said Lord Buddha, doesn't make things empty. The question of the king was, what kind of emptiness is it that doesn't make things empty? And what kind of emptiness is it that it doesn't make empty? Now you see why people didn't include this in the later commentaries. Mm-hmm. I'll say it one last time. Lord Buddha said, emptiness don't make emptiness empty. The question of the king was, what kind of emptiness was it that didn't make things empty? And what kind of emptiness was it that it wasn't making? Okay. Before you lose it. Let me see. I'm going to check it out myself. When we talk about the emptiness that doesn't make things empty, we're talking, this one here is the perception of emptiness. It's the mind that sees emptiness. Okay, Lord Buddha forgot to say the mind that sees. He just said emptiness doesn't make emptiness empty. He should have said the perception of emptiness doesn't make emptiness empty. Okay, so this one over here, the one that doesn't make emptiness empty, what Lord Buddha meant was the mind which sees emptiness doesn't make emptiness empty. Okay, the mind which sees emptiness doesn't make emptiness empty. Okay, doesn't make things empty. The mind which sees emptiness of things, I'm going to shade it over until you catch it, okay? You'll catch it. The mind which sees emptiness directly isn't what made those things empty. Getting closer? So what's the next natural step?
What is the emptiness that makes
emptiness? Not what's the state of mind, okay? I'll say it again.
Okay,
it's not the perception of emptiness that makes things empty. Now, where would I go from there? Now, the natural question between there will be, well, then what is it that makes things empty? If it's not the perception of emptiness that makes things empty, then what makes things empty?
The objects.
There is no cause.
There's no cause. It's always been that way. It's always been, he's the Arya Sangha of the last question. And I'll state it from the text here. Where is it? Chi mepa, sorry, ngar ye chi mepe tsul nikar gopa yino. Ngar ye chi mepe tsul nikar gopa yino means emptiness is not something that didn't used to exist and it started to exist because you saw it. That's all. That's what Alistair said. Come on, everything's been empty for forever. Nothing makes emptiness empty. Emptiness has always been empty. Okay? Arya Sangha is like, come on, that's a trick question. That's why Lord Buddha said what? What was the original weird quotation from Lord Buddha?
That it's not emptiness that makes emptiness empty.
Yeah.
Because nothing that causes emptiness.
Yeah, okay. Okay, we'll go over it again. Rebecca's like, whoa. That's how I felt in the car coming over here from the three-year retreat. Lord Buddha makes the statement, it ain't emptiness that makes emptiness empty. The king says, what the hell was he talking about? Arya Sangha says, well, first of all, the first emptiness he mentioned was the perception of emptiness, was understanding the emptiness of the pen and the waiter who spills the Coke on you. Okay? And that doesn't make things empty.
So the mind that sees emptiness does not make things empty.
Right, because they've been empty.
Always.
Come on, man. What are you talking about making emptiness? And come on. Things have been empty all along. Okay? So the king clarifies the third question. Alistair did it right. God, we had two Arya Sanghas. Three. It's amazing. Yeah?
So emptiness is not a projection of your mind?
Whoa. Of course it's a projection of your mind.
Because it's a thing.
Debate him.
So wasn't it made by your mind? Debate him.
You said it's not caused.
You debate him. I don't mean to be honest. It's a good debate. You take it home and debate it. Okay? That's the kind of question that in a monastery the teacher would say, keep that in your mind, go to debate ground tonight and cause a lot of trouble and let me know what happens. You know? That's exactly the kind of thing you should take to your conversation that you're going to have with somebody. And you, that's what the conversation should be. There shouldn't be, oh, what did Geshe Michael say first? What did Geshe Michael say second? You should go to the controversies. Say, why the hell did he say that? You know? What? Of course emptiness is made. It's a projection. You know? When an Arya sees emptiness in the first moment of their direct perception of emptiness, where's it coming from? Alistair, their mind. So the mind is making it, right? Right? So emptiness is made by the mind that perceives emptiness, right? Right? So Lord Buddha didn't say that emptiness didn't make emptiness, right? And, you know, and then you get people, that's how you debate. We'll have a nice debate park in Diamond Mountain East when...
So the trick of the caveat is the mind that sees emptiness, yeah. Emptiness itself.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll stop there. Yeah.
Actually, isn't there a difference between the seeing emptiness directly and your perception of emptiness?
I don't think so. We can debate that. Cool. I think that's a good place to end.
On
next class, second class, the one reason why I'm very interested in this text, it's all based on the seven diamond-like visions. The whole text, the whole structure of this whole book is called The Seven Diamond-Like Visions. Like, this is one of the only books I've ever seen that explicitly mentions diamond-like. And the whole book is debated, is dedicated, devoted to seven diamond-ish visions. That's going to be the whole structure of the text. And just to see that, then I had a lot more faith in this text. So, I think... you know, stick around for the second class. We'll start to go through the structure and the seven diamond-like visions. Okay, it's appropriate for Diamond Mountain, I guess. Yeah.
Good evening, Nam Guru Vana Manava Andriya Dayami Diye Devogun Salam Yashe Tantoshin Salam Yashe Lechume Tabakuni Tabashto.
You know, people on this day, they make big butter sculptures and they pile the altars with things, and people make satsas, and I think the greatest offering you can make on this day is to talk about emptiness. And I think you've just made the greatest offering you can make on Buddha, Lord Buddha's day. So be happy and have a nice dinner, right? It's the dinner time. And it's a lot more powerful if you think about how you just offered Lord Buddha, probably in my mind, the best offering Lord Buddha would like on a day like today. I'm not into piling up altars with stuff, and I'm into, you know, we just had a heavy class about emptiness, and I think if you mentally offer that to Lord Buddha, like happy birthday, there's no better offering than that. So, congratulations.